don't even have to be here.
Go on. Go on. It's just the hair, Cecily.
Oh. The voice wasn't there.
The voice wasn't there.
No bad joke. Did I tell you a good bad joke? I haven't told you good. I forgot my poetry book again. And I didn't tell you any bad jokes.
Yeah.
You know, this one from my daughter. You know what they call a musician who's broken up with his girlfriend?
Wow.
Homeless. Some of you don't get it.
We get it.
It's one of those reality jokes. Reality TV, reality jokes. They're not so funny or something, I'm not sure.
There's a little bit of delayed reaction.
Yeah. Wait a minute. We're girlfriend. Homeless! Yeah. You musician? So Trick found the book I was suggesting to you on last classes on the net. Did you know that already?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So you got the text if you want it.
What was it called, Cecily?
What was it called? That was called, what's it called?
Lamdre.
Lamdre, right.
We can send it to you.
Lamdre.
Okay.
It's very, very nice. The Dawn of Enlightenment.
Yes.
And the author is a man that his name is Chodek Rinpoche, and he lives in most of the time in Australia, but he spends his time between Australia and His Eminence Chögyal Rinpoche, who's one of the highest teachers of the Sakya order. Those of you who don't know anything about Tibetan Buddhism are saying, what the hell on earth is she going on about here? But in the Tibetan Buddhist system, there are four main sects, and Sakya tradition is one of the sects. Chodek Rinpoche, when he was 15, was a translator for Chodek Rinpoche, His Eminence, for many years. So he speaks really, really good English. You know, he speaks more than two languages, more than Tibetan and English, but his English is excellent. And he's a lovely teacher, and as many of you, those of you who know me, know that I was looking for a highest yoga tantra meditation to do, which is a particular kind of Tibetan practice. And I had received such initiations and some teaching on them, but I never felt like I had enough teaching to really take it in depth on my own, and I can't see myself changing sex and becoming a Tibetan-speaking monk to live in a monastery where you could get the full teaching, you know. It seems unlikely this lifetime, and I'm very impatient by nature, you know. I'm North American. I want it now. What do you mean I have to wait? Now? Give it to me now. So I was looking around, shopping around for how I could get a highest yoga tantra teaching. And enough teaching with it that I could actually practice it. Because at a certain point I would always run into question, and it would get just repetitive. It wouldn't be something that both my heart and intellect were involved in equally, and I personally like to use both. And then I heard about the Lamdre teaching, and so I attended that, and it certainly fulfilled my expectations on that. I've been able to do a highest yoga tantra teaching with full teaching, and have accessible teachers who have used that as a main path, mm-hmm. and have themselves done. Lama Chodek Rinpoche has done 3-year retreats on the Lamdre teaching. So this is his book that's an introduction before you would receive Lamdre. to the ideas of Landry. So, and it has some really lovely things in it about different levels of meditation and what you do with thought and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he speaks such excellent language, and mm-hmm. it's very, very useful little. It's less than 300 pages, isn't
That's
it?
Right, yeah.
So I was reading a little bit from it. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo aini tassa, the state, bhagavato, the blessedness, arahato, freedom from all bullshit. That's actually, is that literal? My translation. Samma, fully sambuddhassa, moving into a state of openness. I mean that state. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato
samma sambuddhassa.
Because it's traditional to start a teaching by naming what you would aspire to. And then maybe you people will keep me on track. If I get too trackless. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think that might be enough of these. I'll tell you what, I'll give half of them one way and half of them the other. How's that, more or less? Brenda's already got this one, so she's just going to slip off into bliss and enlightenment. The rest of us plow through it. So we are talking, we're going to get to this piece of paper in a little while, but at the moment. Is there enough? A short too? Or is it just... Did you get one?
Oh, I was waiting.
Does everybody have one?
Does everyone have one?
Yeah.
Okay. I have two now.
God, you're twice as lucky as me. I got one. So we're going to get to that in a minute, so don't start reading it yet. So I had really interesting questions, like how does one invoke... how does one stop from making a difference between practice and daily life? I've mm-hmm. talked a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. Questions about how is Buddhism relevant in our world? I've talked a little bit about that. I had some really nice questions about why you would do a meditation like an arising yoga where you visualize some figure with more arms than you would ever have and eyes where you really would find it uncomfortable when you were dusting and things like that. And I've touched on that a little bit. And questions about dreams. And really, I really appreciate your requests for me, what you would like me to talk about. That's very useful. And I'm going to try to do a little bit of a hodgepodge class tonight. Is that okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Any complaints about that? Okay. And some of you are very new, so if I start talking about something and you don't understand me, you just say, excuse me, could you say that some other way? Is that good? Because that stops me from getting too caught in jargon, and I really appreciate that, because half the time I don't realize when I'm doing that. And some of these people, you know, they've been around the same teachers as long as me, and they just know that I'm an exhibitionist, so they're very kind to let me sit here. And so they probably wouldn't do that, because they already know the words. Is that okay? Have we covered all the ground there? Okay. So why would you meditate, and why would you have problems meditating? Those are the two things that I thought I'd start with today. Is that okay? Why would you meditate? There's really only one reason. why any of us would meditate, and that's to stop being addicted to meaning. Because we're so addicted to having a meaning to give ourselves purpose. And how are you going to know what your life is about if it's always dependent on something else? How do you know anything if it's always in relation to? Because you don't know whether you're actually seeing what you're seeing, do you? Have you ever had the experience where you're looking at somebody and somebody next to you is looking at something? And you both see two different things?
Yes.
Who's right? Who's right? I mean, other than you. You're right, and they're right. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. You know that there are people who are colorblind, don't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They see gray, and you see green, right? Mm-hmm. Who's right? You know, if you take a dog for a walk, you can't figure out why that dog is smelling all those bushes. Really? You just know that, oh yeah, dogs are going to smell, and then you pull out the leash, right? But you have no idea what kind of reality is right for them in that. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Mm-hmm. Or like your cat. Like when a cat comes in, mm-hmm. and rubs themselves against you. You know how they do that? They rub against your leg? Mm-hmm. You don't know that they're leaving a scent marker there. And that if you're a really good cat, you'll reach down and lick it. And then you'll know what mood they're in. Mm. You don't know that, do you? But to them, that is exactly right.
Yes.
And to you, your, oh, hi, baby, you want me to touch you, is exactly right. So the whole idea of you with your meaning with your pets and your pets with their meaning for you are like totally different universes. Okay, it's easy with pets because we know they're... But you must know that about politics too, don't you? Your view of what is going on in politics and the politician's view has got to be quite different, doesn't it? I mean, I hope so. And you know that with every position you have, as a parent, as a child, there is a view that the other will not have. Isn't that true?
Yes.
As a sister, as a brother, as an aunt, as an uncle, as a friend. And if you know that all those views are right, then you know that all those views are dependent on the experiences of the viewer. Is that true? You following that? Or, yeah. So if all views are dependent on the experiences of the viewer, and the viewer's eyes are going to get a little duller as their age, and you know, their sense of taste isn't going to be quite a thing because the plate covers up the top of the gum. And what'd you say? What? And then, you know, the cataracts start, and then you get up and you go, oh. You know, and then you can't walk, and then you can't remember somebody's name. Yeah, I know it's not this week, but it's coming. In the best of all worlds, all the things outside of ourselves that give us our meaning are all going to start collapsing in on us. It isn't that you need to be alarmist. There should be some part of that yourself that understands that there is no way you can depend on other to give the sense of refuge to your deepest self. Mm-hmm. So sometime in your life, 5 minutes a day, to never mind what your mind is saying about other, But try to look for the gap between all those just the little gap, and say, is anybody there when I'm not home? Is anybody there when I'm not home? Because whoever the I is going to be not home. If there's an accident, you know, a little insanity now and then, it really screws up a day. Nothing like a brain cell cancer, you know, that can really change your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're not immune. Are we?
No.
So at which point in your life are you going to take the time, other than when I am in charge of my life and totally in control and deciding where I'm going to go and who I'm going to do it with and why and what I'm going to buy next week for my next wardrobe, other than that, who am I? When I am not here, who am I? Before you were in a relationship, who were you? Before you had a job, who were you? Before you had children, who were you? Before you went to grade 10, before you went to grade 8, before you were in school at all, before you could walk, before you could read. Because all those things build over a life and then dissolve over a life. And whatever it is that we are depending on that's outside of that is what is going to be the most interesting thing for us to learn how to focus on. Don't you agree? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an insurance policy. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? So that's why you meditate. So that you make some time, somehow, somewhere in your being, 5 minutes a day. It doesn't matter if you do it well, only that you grow the wish, mm-hmm. saying, other than the meanings I have, mm-hmm. I have. You can say thou if you want, you can use any language you want, but it is your right as an intelligent human being to realize that a lot of what we are placing our importance in life is a meaning involved with an object. And is there any meaning without object? Right. Now that's a really good question, isn't it? And don't you have the right to have one good question sometime in your life?
Yes.
I mean, you can write yourself a note. Dear, you are allowed to have one good question this lifetime. Yours truly. This is good. You could, you know, put a magnet on it on the fridge. I'd have to take some of my magnets off the fridge.
Where?
But I didn't that. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints so far?
That's a brilliant question.
It is. It is, because we get so screwed up with meaning. We get so, did I say screwed up?
Yes.
Confused. I'm going to try to clean up my language, because I realize how respectful you all are, and I should live up to you.
Yeah.
Yes.
The I, which, you know, so far in Buddhist teaching that I've learned, there is no I, or it's just a composite of each moment, right? So I'm just trying to kind of figure out beyond, like, where to go with that question. You know, where
that I was deeper. Just trying to figure it out. That yeah. I was just trying to figure right. it out. That's just fine. It isn't that the I doesn't exist. It's that the sense of self is continuously changing.
Mm. Right.
The sense of self is continuously updating. But every time there's a new update on your computer, does it remember all the old updates? Does it?
Overwrites them.
Yeah. Huh?
Doesn't it overwrite them?
It overwrites them. That's exactly what our ego is. It's continuously overwriting all the updates.
Well, I've always thought this. What?
What? Thanks, Cole.
It doesn't. What does it do?
I
will
sit in
the
iteration.
Huh?
It just keeps them all.
Keeps them all?
Because we go through so many of them. And if you get a mistake in something that's going on that was related to something in the past, it has to go back and correct that.
Okay.
Correct all the way
right.
Up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. No, that's lovely, because that's actually more what the sense of self does. It holds on to something, and then if something has to be corrected in the past, it just whips back and does that. But the one that's operating is the one that I believe is I. And there is this tendency, if you look at yourself, that when you're sitting here right now, you think you are who you are now and that you have always been who you are now. Isn't that true?
No.
But most people do.
Yeah. No, I know for sure that I'm not the person I've been a year ago, months ago even.
Yeah, but for many people, they don't have that clarity. And you must understand that that's true for many people.
I don't know. How can I know for other people?
Because of how they act or how they speak. But you're quite right. How can you really know? You can't really know. But there is this kind of sense of, now I know that I don't know who I was a year ago, or, you know. And there is an I who has an assumption about that. The sense of self always feels like, this is what I know. And you don't usually see that it comes into being. The sense of self arises according to the circumstance. The self that's driving a car is not the same self that's sitting in this room. Is that good?
Yes.
Yeah?
So if you have one of those, a moment where you're seeing, maybe it was just in the movement or the sense of light coming in or something, a window where you have a recollection of being two, and there is a bond with that still. There is still that I. You know, that's where I might have come from. And of course, I'm a much more complex person probably now. But I still feel so connected with an essence that's there.
Yeah.
But I I mistake that for some sense of self. Like that is carrying,
sense of self.
You know.
It is. In that moment, when that light comes through. Because what I'm saying about the sense of self is the sense of self is very much there, but it's coming into being and dissolving all the time, depending on circumstances. Mm. And we don't see it coming into being and passing away. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Picture, 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 picture. Now you put them together real fast, and it's like a continuous motion. I'll be right with you. Is that... That's all I wanted to say about the sense of self, that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really, to understand that you don't have to get rid of the ego. Mm-hmm. And you can't get rid of the ego. What you can do is acknowledge that there is this continuous change occurring.
Yeah.
Even if it's a change to what seems like a similar pattern.
Yeah. I guess the challenge that I discover with the dissolving of self is how to keep functioning in a world that is kind of, that's the system that operates, you know, that there are these selves everywhere, and how do you kind of, you know, keep functioning, kind of, you know, how do you continue being a mother with duties or a person with a job to pay your bills? Or, like, you know what I'm saying? There's a challenge there when things are dissolving in that space, in that point where you're kind of feeling, okay, I'm just, Do you see what I'm saying?
You're just what? Yeah.
At each moment, I'm this new self.
Yeah.
And if I can't remember that series of selves, you know, it's the fear that, how, you know, I don't, you know what I'm just saying? It's a challenge to me. It's a scary thing, that sense of dissolution.
A sense of dissolution.
That how does, you know, how do I appear for just the sake of functioning amongst this, in this reality?
It's very important to function in this reality. Yeah. It is so important to do that. And how do you do it? You have to do it with kindness. You have to do it with kindness to yourself and kindness to others. Mm. Okay. And you can't be kind to others unless... What? Unless what?
You're kind to yourself?
That's right.
All right. So...
So what do you need to do?
I don't try to be somewhere else for someone else if I'm not really feeling
that would
there
be
for me.
That would be good.
That would be
that would help
start.
A lot, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just take a kind of a step back and say, okay, I don't, you know, it's not going to fall apart without me for whatever.
2 seconds. I got 2 seconds.
That's when my processor is speedy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see. Yeah. That's good. That's a good suggestion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But is
wait a second. Yeah. 1 second. Yes.
I was just wondering, you said self was a series of frames.
In a way, it is. Yeah,
so
in a way.
What would be between those frames?
That's exactly the question.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the question. That's exactly the question.
Yeah, I understand. Isn't
it an amazing question?
Yeah.
That's the question in Buddhism. That's why you meditate.
Yeah.
Is there? Is self a series of prints? Is there? When I'm not here, what's happening? That's the question.
Yeah.
Answer? No, I'm not going to answer that question. Because everybody is like, you're right to explore that. Yes.
Thinking of the language around that, in the sense of sometimes there are some teasing things in Buddhism that you can get caught in playing a selfless person rather than the exploration of what is happening from moment to moment. But
yeah, exactly.
I'm going to wipe myself out now. This is a goal or something, you know, rather than paying attention to things. And I've gotten caught in the language of Buddhism and in its traps.
Yeah, it's exactly true. It's a very big trap, and that's, you know, the one thing that, and that's why I keep reiterating, you know, for most people, they're not interested at all in what Buddhism really is on about, which is this question. That's what Buddhism is on about. It's a, other than your meaning, what is real? That's what Buddhism, and it's lovely, it's a lovely system, because in order to ask that question with any power, you have to be pretty healthy and pretty sane. So the steps that you need to do of the meditation to get to that stage are actually very useful for anybody. So it can be very useful for a lot of people, and a lot of people are very attracted to Buddhism. But very many of the people attracted to Buddhism want to know who your root guru is, mm-hmm. or what your attainment is, or what school you belong to, or you want to know what somebody else is teaching because you want to know whether they're teaching anything that you're teaching, or you want to know whether, you know, that person got something from that retreat. Or I had a friend who was always, always moving. And he was actually went to a retreat with Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche when he was still alive. And I'd been to talks by Chogyam Trungpa, but I'd never been to a retreat, and I was really curious. And I was asking him about the retreat, and because he was so excited about going.
And he's back from the retreat, and I asked him about the retreat, and he said, well, I had to leave in the middle of one of the classes, and I missed most of the thing I went for, because the door was locked when I was trying to come back, because my cell phone was ringing telling me about the next teacher he was going to. Because it can get like that. You can make it just part of your meaning. You know, so if you think that you have to do something in order to use Buddhism, you're going to get caught. But if you're willing to think you want to see who is doing, in that process you will find the most amazing little things. You'll find how to be kinder to yourself. You will. Because you'll see your own bullshit. I mean, that was my experience. Some of you?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a lot of troubles with this, with grasping this thing. Basically, what you're saying, that meditation is the answer. But for me, as a beginner, I don't feel that. I have to believe in that. I have to trust your word that that's the answer. Mm-hmm. Because when I do meditation, for me it's still mechanical mostly. It's a process that I have to go, and I have to believe and trust that I have to work through. I have to invest this work, and maybe it will take years until I get to that point. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it's mm-hmm. true, that you can get to, it's not just the fairy tales of all those people, that those are real experiences, that you can connect to your true self. But I don't feel that, so I guess I'm looking for the meaning in the meditation while
Surely,
you
of course.
Saying
of course.
Get rid of the looking for the meaning.
No, I'm not saying get rid of it. I'm saying that what meditation really does, its most pinnacle thing that it does, is brings you to the point where you're willing to look beyond the meaning. I'm saying the one thing that meditation does is it's the one activity that I know of, prayer too, one activity that I know of where you let go of your own sense of what should be happening and look beyond, or look without object. You open the door to what you don't know. So, could you, do you mind my asking what meditation you're doing?
Mantra.
And when you're doing it, are your eyes closed?
Yes, I feel that it's easier for me to concentrate, to focus with the eyes closed.
Have you tried it with your eyes open?
Yes.
How long? And you're just doing mantra, saying one mantra, and
I tried different ways. I tried last summer. I went to Shambhala and tried to use their techniques. It's basically just sitting with the eyes half closed and observing the breathing. And their sessions are pretty long, like an hour. For beginners, I found that it's very, very exhausting. But mostly I found it was difficult for me to focus, I guess, without the object, as you say. I needed an object of meditation, om, for instance, sound, or visualization of something, or candle, or whatnot, would be easier for me. So I'm kind of, I guess, grasping for things that will anchor me to the practice.
Exactly. Exactly. So what is it that you think would prove that you are successful in the meditation? What happened?
That's probably what I'm looking for. That's the meaning, right?
What is the meaning for you when your mind stayed focused on the sound and everything else disappeared, or what?
I'm not sure.
I'm just wondering, there must be some sense of something that you're trying, that you feel would be the
I'm not sure. At this point, it's more of a question.
Okay.
What should I look for?
Yeah.
What are the right signs that I'm doing something right or I'm doing something wrong?
Do you notice any difference in your daily life since you started doing the meditation?
No.
None at all? You don't notice that your dreams have changed or that you have... You're a little slower in reacting to things?
No, I don't think so.
No difference at all? Usually there's a difference. The difference is first noticed in one's life. Usually. Usually the last place you see the change is in your own practice. Usually the change first manifests in one's life. People become nicer somehow.
It's hard for me to associate that with saying words that I don't understand or counting.
But you do notice when you notice that you have a little more space with the people around you.
I don't think it has any dependency on meditation practice. I think it depends on what my philosophy in life is and what I'm thinking about, what I'm focusing my thoughts on, and my attitude to life. And
so if you're focusing your thoughts on some sounds, do you think that doesn't have any effect on you? Because what is the difference between thought and sound?
I don't know. I don't feel that the practice itself makes change, philosophical change, attitude change in my life.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a really interesting statement. I would rather talk to you personally about your practice than do it here because.
Right.
Because it would be nice to go more personally with it. If you're
take over, just
please, you are not taking over. I'm just telling you why I'm not going to take over with this question. I'm just backing out a little bit because if you wanted to talk to me personally about this, I would find that very interesting. That we could maybe explore, you know, what my suggestions might be if you want to pursue meditation and.
I would appreciate that.
Yeah, well, let's talk after the class, see what we can do. Mm-hmm. Okay. So meanwhile, where were we? Mm-hmm. Before I got totally involved? The gap, thank you.
We came to the gap.
Went for a walk in the woods and saw the gap. So what happens if you lose your practice and then you want to pick it up again or you think you should? Well, first of all, don't think you should. Number one advice is don't think you should. Because guilt is a bugger of a way to start practicing. It's not so useful. What you want to do is say, okay, what was it that I was getting out of meditation? Because interest is a wonderful thing to start a practice with. Mm-hmm. Or, will the meditation be different this time that I pick it up?
Yeah.
Which is an even better question, isn't it? Yeah. That's the first thing you want to do. The next thing you want to do is you want to make sure that you make the time for yourself to do a practice slightly shorter than you can actually do. Slightly shorter. So if you can sit for 20 minutes, sit for 10. And when you do it for 10 and you start getting really hungry, still do it for 10. And you do it for 10 and you get really, really hungry, say, okay, I'll do it for 20.
And when you know you're going to miss a day, then you say, okay, I'm going to sit for 2 minutes, and then I'm going to put the practice down. Mm-hmm. So you haven't missed a day. Today, I'm going to sit for 2 minutes. Is that clear?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you can be 2 minutes late, or not put your lipstick on, or comb your hair, or something. Mm-hmm. You can do that.
Yes.
You can be 2 minutes late. You can. That's not a problem. You see me do it all the time. You pick a meditation that actually is, you can't fit into that time. If you're going to do one like I was suggesting, Precious Human Birth, and you notice that that one takes about 50 minutes to do, but you notice that it's in parts. Mm-hmm. You do one part one day, and then all the rest of the day you think about that part.
Yeah.
Use it as a cue. And then the next day you do the next part, and you use that as a cue. And then the next day you do the next part. If you haven't been doing a meditation for a while, but you've done quite a lot of meditations, pick something that's like a beginning practice. Because you want to see what's different when you're doing it. So you notice everything I'm saying has to do with kindness.
I'm squirming just,
I'm
here.
Just, well, I wasn't looking at you until you started poofing.
Sorry. Can I raise a question about if you've not been formally practicing?
Yeah.
And, of course, not been feeling guilty except in the very back of your mind where you realize you haven't been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But some, like, doing a mantra during the day, it doesn't really count, does it? Like, if you integrate
everything
part of
counts.
It. No, but I mean,
everything
it doesn't
counts.
Really, it's not the same as sitting. And what I'm asking is...
Yeah, sleeping isn't the same as going for a walk either. You know, like that's not the point. Like, you don't discount what you do.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. And now you want to pick up a practice, do a short one.
Yeah. If you've been doing a practice and you've been noticing a lot of change in your life, almost too much... And so that
then
like,
you call Cecily.
You have a number?
Most people know it.
All right, well, okay.
But you don't call her on Monday or Tuesday.
Right.
Unless you have to, in which case you do.
All right, I'll get your number.
And you don't call her before noon because you know what she does in the morning?
Oh,
what does she do?
Yeah, she meditates every morning. It used to be until 8, and she felt guilty about it that you couldn't call her. Now it's like noon. And she's like proud. No, don't call me before noon. If it's an emergency, you can call me, and I'll go, yeah? Oh. Oh, you're a telemarketer. Because maybe you need to talk to somebody more, or, you know, talk to other people and see. There's lots of teachers around. You talk to them, ask. You ask somebody. You ask somebody who you trust.
Right.
You know? Okay. And say, maybe the meditation isn't the right meditation.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll get your number.
All right.
Get it.
And then you need to get my schedule too.
Well, is it the same person who will have both?
Maybe.
I can give you Novayana.
There's a website called Novayana, Novayana, and they always have my schedule.
Yeah.
.org.
Okay.
They always tell you where I am. But there's lots of teachers come here, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, lot. I mean, there's lots of, and there's, you know, there's more teachers in the world than you can shake sticks at, you know.
But you don't always want to talk to them all about.
No, that's
you know,
true.
Like,
But you could ask two or three and see if they give you the same information. You know, even if two or three of them give you the same information, you can say, well, okay, there might be something in this.
Maybe.
You know?
So in other words, have a survey.
Oh. Why not? You know, if I don't understand it, why not? Why not?
Anyway, thank you, Mel.
Yeah.
Do something.
Where was I? I'm getting lost here.
The gap.
No, we keep going back.
Kindness. Thank you. We did the gap. We're into kindness.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Talking about how to do a practice when you haven't been doing one. So you start short. You start with interest. And you don't do guilt. And if you're sitting and then you haven't told and you keep getting interrupted, you make sure you go around and tell everybody that you're sitting. Mm-hmm. I've told you this story before. When I started wanting to sit more, not just to 8 o'clock, but to 10 o'clock, I noticed that if the phone rang, I picked it up. Mm. Or if I thought, oh my God, we need milk, I would go out to the store and get it.
Right.
So what I did was I told them at the store, I told the postman, I told the neighbors, I told everybody, the bus drivers, I told everybody, if I appeared on the street before 10 o'clock, somebody was guaranteed to say, oh, I thought you were meditating or praying, you know, or whatever I told them. You know. I thought you were doing your private work until 10. How come you're up there? And say, thank you, bye. Thank you. Because I just love to, you know, get busy. So I needed all the help I could get.
Yeah.
I just love, as you notice, to get sidetracked and, you know, oh yeah, let's go there. So you don't, like, make it your own grim determination. Because it's your involvement with everybody that you're doing this for. And so you get everybody to support you in it. That's nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this nice? I've decided to meditate. If you see me not doing it, would you just remind me? Thanks. And then when they do remind you, remember not to hit them. You know, close your mouth firmly. And even if you go back in the room and have a temper tantrum instead of meditating, congratulate yourself. You've done well. Is that good?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Basically set it up so that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, start simple and keep it simple until you get really, really hungry. Not just, I would like to sit a little longer once or twice. But where you consistently think, I would like to just change the meditation or do something a little longer. And you say, oh, okay, I can do 20 minutes. And you just keep at that until you're hungry. There's really only one quality that will guarantee that you will move through the stages of meditation the most quickly and the most smoothly, and that's just interest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Through interest you will develop tranquility, you will develop joy, you will develop depth of understanding, and develop the ability to be kind. But you have to start with interest, and you have to be interested in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I when I'm not here? What an interesting question.
Yeah.
So when you're doing any meditation, whether you're doing a rising yoga, or whether you're doing a meditation on the breath, there are various things you want to do. You want to start with a sort of a bookend, the beginning, and bookend the end. So you're sort of saying, okay, within this period of time, even if nothing different happens than ever, even if everything just goes exactly the same as always, I'm going to call this meditation. I like to compare it to if you're going to make a cake, you use a bowl. You don't just do it on the counter. It's easier to sort of, like, you know, mix the eggs. kind of makes it all handleable somehow. So that's very important. So there are a lot of different ways to bookend it. One of them is like this kind of namo tassa, or I would like to do this not only for myself, but for the benefit of all beings. Or I'm doing this because I was told I should. Or whatever. But naming some kind of sense of, okay, now I'm starting. And then when you finish, you name some kind of sense of, okay, now I finished. So this piece of paper that I've given to you is a very long-winded compilation of the various teachings I have received from my many wonderful, beloved teachers, and especially picked from the language of Lama Chodek Rinpoche, who that Landry book is from, because I love the way he uses English. But these ideas are from all kinds of teachers of how you would start a practice. So I wrote this out because over the years I found this useful. Maybe you'd find this useful, maybe you wouldn't. Maybe there'll be one idea in it that would be useful to you, so you would work with that idea. Maybe one day you'll work with one idea and one day you'll work with another. It doesn't matter to me. But it starts by saying, to invoke the best frame of mind for the practice of meditation. Recall the root gurus. Well, already we got trouble. What the heaven, hell, and earth is a root guru? Huh? Tell me. What's a root guru?
One's teachers.
Yeah.
There's probably so many root gurus.
Yeah.
Yeah, people or any being from whom we feel we've been inspired.
That's right. That's exactly. A root guru is the guru or the teacher who is the root of a teaching you have received. So if you learn how to make quilts from somebody, they're your quilt root guru.
Yeah.
If you learn how to make brownies, you're your brownie root guru. If you learn how to change oil, they're your oil changing root guru. If you learn how to, you know, whatever. So what is this really pointing at? This is pointing at, if you remember learning, you are hooked to the energy of root guru.
Yes.
If you remember where 1 minute you didn't know something and the next minute you understood it, that moment between those two is the energy of root guru. Not the answer and not the question, but that leap between the two. Isn't that?
Yes.
So to invoke the best frame of mind for the practice of meditation, remember the first time you saw the Grand Canyon. The first time you tasted Tibetan tea. First time you fell in love, the first time you held a baby. Right? Just like fill your mind with, oh yeah, not, yep, bloop. First. That's the energy of root guru. That you're actually capable of unknowing knowing. Right between the two. It's kind of a little bit of practice of gap. Just a tad. So you recall it, root gurus, and you experience their blessing. Well, as soon as you recall that, you are experiencing the blessing. This makes the mind, body, and the place of meditation divine and pure. Hey, go figure, was it that easy all along? Yes, it is that easy. And especially if you practice it. Sometimes when I have people on retreat, I have them spending a whole day just remembering first.
just to loosen their sense of what they should be doing or who they, you know, just let go of it all and just be first. First time you ever smelled a flower. I wonder what that was. But it's in there somewhere. Nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first paragraph. Next one. This I love. Well, I love the whole thing, but this I love. Acknowledge the clarity of mind. Because to be able to recall the first, there has to be some kind of clarity of your mind that allows you to pick that out, doesn't there?
Yes.
So now you turn around and you acknowledge, well, the mind has clarity.
Sometimes.
No, always. Sometimes the clarity is clearly showing you confusion. Sometimes it's clearly showing dullness, scatteredness, agitation, fear, whatever. But the clarity is always there. How we can see the first is because of clarity. It's like the screen on which the movie plays, you know? You've heard this from me 1,000 times, haven't you? Or the space through which the train in Didsbury runs. Always there. Always there, that clarity. Acknowledge the clarity of mind known as awareness. Realize the good fortune bestowed by this clarity. You can see the confusion. You can see the scattering. You can see the agitation. If you can see it, that means maybe you are knowing it. Doesn't it? I like that part.
Say that again.
If you can see it, that might mean you're not it.
Oh, thank you.
So after you've done those two things, one, you know that there are firsts, that is to say, it's possible for you to learn something new, that is to say, clarity.
Yeah.
Open and clarity. Then you briefly acknowledge that life sucks. But you don't start off with life sucks.
Mm-hmm.
You don't start off with life sucks. Because then the clarity is going to be focused in on life sucks. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Of all states of existence, but you notice it says, what's the first word of that paragraph, ladies and gentlemen?
Really?
Son of a gun. Don't go out and buy the newspaper. Briefly. Notice. Pain of all existence. Feel sadness for those who are blindly caught in unhappiness. A lot of beings, aren't they? Maybe just for the moment you aren't, because you just have just evoked firsts and you've noticed clarity. And just for a moment, just for a moment, you have just a breathing space. I think so many people are caught all the time. So many animals. Unable to see how they become trapped by their own habitual aversion. Attraction and lack of awareness. From the pity that arises when seeing this way. Now, I know that so many people in North America do not like the word pity. And I would just like to say to you all, tough.
It's a really good word. It does not mean condescending. What?
Isn't it the close enemy of compassion, though?
That translation, in that translation, yeah, but not in my language. It is the first, when it's involved with someone you really love, like if you have a child, and you feel that the child's suffering, then you get dragged, because the compassion, when it's fully developed, becomes spaciousness. But when you feel pity for somebody you really love, you lose all sense of space and you just start looking for revenge, or mm-hmm. you get caught in the near enemy, which is, isn't that meanness? Isn't it the desire to torture or get back at or revenge or meanness? Yeah. So, but I'm not talking about that. I don't like that definition. I don't like that. Not talking about that. I'm talking about that sense of, oh my gosh, people can't just take the time to see. They're just caught in habits. Or dogs or cats or, you know, if you have an awareness of elementals or angels, you know, or beings who live in tortured states, if you have been in places where there are energies of beings caught, you know, if you know those states, and then there is this sense of, oh my gosh, they can't see. Mm-hmm. So it's just brief. You just look at that, and then you think, okay, well, I got to do this not only for me, but for them. Mm-hmm. Because at least I can remember first. And I can acknowledge clarity. Mm-hmm. I can see what suffering there is everywhere. What can I do? Not only for myself, but for everybody. My experience is that I will do for others what I won't do for myself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's my experience. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful helping another. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's so glorious.
Well, you kind of help yourself, don't you, when you're helping others?
Absolutely.
Because you're not stuck here, you're out
That's
there.
Right. That's right.
And it's a very fulfilling to be out there sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But exactly. So that's what you're doing here. You're increasing your motive here. First, you've established that you know what the desire to be looking into the gap is like, the root guru thing. And then you know the thing about clarity. Now you know the thing about motive. Mm. Not only myself, but everybody. So now you're choosing meaning. You're still using meaning here, but you're choosing it for a specific way. You're not going to get caught being a cash cow for our culture, going out buying because you feel dissatisfied. You're doing something else here. Understand that the precious qualities present now rarely manifest. Is that true? Isn't it? And who knows how long they will continue to. This life is the result of many positive actions ripening. From all your ancestors, from all my ancestors. How many solar systems come into being and pass away before this one does? Mm-hmm. Which universe, which lifetime? Actions performed over countless lifetimes, supported by aspiration, morality, and wholesome community. We are surrounded by innumerable beings for whom the greatest desire is to simply survive. Wasps. Their greatest desire is just simply to survive. And it gets harder and harder as it gets hotter and hotter and drier and they get older and older. They get bloody bad tempered about this time of year, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to survive. That's all they're trying to do. There's more beetles than humans on the earth. That's a lot of beings. There's a lot of humans. Everyday aspects of our lives, which we take for granted. Oh, can I have a drink of water? You know? Oh, let's turn the light on. I can't quite see yet. I mean, we just take them so for granted. Being able to wear glasses. Getting false teeth. I mean, you probably think how you don't want to get them. But can you imagine if you couldn't get them? I want to tell you, do brush. It's horrible, horrible having false teeth. But if you get them, be grateful. Floss. But if you can get them, be grateful. Children in Africa, how many are dying every day? Everyday aspects of our lives, which are often taken for granted, are beyond even the dreams of most life forms. So that's briefly, you know? Because you don't want to go into a spiraling depression and call for Prozac or whatever. Not only has clarity of mind and physical support ripened in this life, not only that, but we have also received Dharma teaching. Dharma teaching means teaching of something provable. Teaching of something that you can see for yourself. That's what it actually means. To be seen for oneself, that's Dharma. We have little cause to foster despair, Little cause. The problems that do arise are trivial when seen with clarity. But there is no way of knowing how long these excellent conditions will last. Life is fragile. At any moment, sickness and death can occur. Without delay, while opportunity to practice and the gift of profound teaching has been received, meet this moment with joy. How lucky. Now one day, all material possessions, positions, relationships, even one's senses will dissolve. Imagine when your eyes dissolve, when you can no longer see. What remains? What is a lasting refuge? When perception of subject-object duality, which creates a sense of self, fades, the desire from which that perception arises will still go on. Habitual craving rules death as well as life. Only by habitual wishing, habitually wishing to use this present moment as a blessed opportunity, not just for oneself, but for all beings, can refuge be gained. with gratitude for these precious teachings, handed down over hundreds of years, embrace this truth. This causes some thought, doesn't it? Do you have questions? Comments? Want to leave it for now?
It seems that that knowing comes and goes, and it's very, very difficult to live with a continuity of that. The habitual patterns of getting caught in all the unwholesome stuff are so strong. Mm-hmm. It feels like you have to keep touching that again.
Well, I read this every day. And it took me about 5 years to write this one little page, folks. About 5 years to write this one little page. And I've been going over all these ideas and thinking, okay, this is the order I want to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. I read this every day. I wrote this last year in December when I was in New Zealand. But it was a compilation of about 5 years of study or more of like trying to what things I wanted to really remember. So I read this whole thing every morning. Because, yeah, exactly. And some days I go, oh yeah, to move on the best frame of mind, especially because I wrote it, you know. Okay, did that. No, it's clarity, mind, clarity, mind. Yeah, okay, next one. But once something will catch me. Maybe not, maybe I don't, you know. But something will catch me. Or maybe later it will catch me. Yeah.
Can you speak to refuge? You're saying here, by doing this, a blessed opportunity. By doing that, can refuge be granted?
And be gained, yeah.
Be gained.
Yeah.
What do you experience from refuge?
A total release from fear. Non-clinging. Not having to try for anything. No expectations. That's on bad days. On good days, feeling like I'm continuously always in love.
Right.
And having the most exquisite orgasm in the cells of my body all the time. Those good days are very rare. Like that. And so you have that in the highest yoga tantra where, like, actually, life is your consort. Mm-hmm. And you're just hot and heavy right now in highest yoga tantra. That's it. Like, this is it. And it is exactly what you wanted. Everything around you is exactly what you wanted. It's even so good that it's better than that. So that would be refuge. Where there is nowhere to go to, or nowhere to go back from. Is that okay?
Yes.
That last, the thing you just read, the very last thing about the power of the moment, it seems to me that to the extent that I can actually be fully present in the moment. You know, they always talk about be here now, that kind of thing. It's such a tremendous challenge, and yet that openness to the moment does release me from aspiration, fear, craving.
Exactly.
Because there's really no other... The moment you can actually focus on the moment and be open to all that is around. You know, the wind, the beauty of your home, the cat, you know. It's the power of that perception, for me, is enough to release me from all of those questions.
Exactly.
And yet it's so difficult because we don't think of doing it. Or I don't think of doing it.
Because we get caught in...
We get caught up in the doing and all that.
In what they call in Buddhism, becoming.
Yeah. And you know that book, The Power of Now, they have study groups around it and all that.
Eckhart Tolle, his brilliant book.
Well, it is, because I find that just that one concept, quite aside from other things about meditation and all these other things you can talk about, the simplicity of returning to that one thing is so powerful.
Yes, it is.
So I, you know...
Yep. It is. Anyone else? So then comes visualize the refuge objects clearly in front. So you know this from the thing I wrote a while ago about Guru Yoga. You have that. Whatever figure you put in front is basically a no-name brand guru. Right? That you get at Superstore or something. Yellow box. You know the ones? And it basically is, the guru figure that you use is basically like a box, a cereal box or something, but without a brand name on it. And what you do is you just image it filled with all the firsts until it's chock full of firsts. So you're using, don't think that you actually have to believe in that figure or that lineage, because it's not true. You don't have any experience. If you do, you're just putting it on. It's not about that. It's that having already evoked the root gurus at the beginning, now you're going to put a no-name brand figure in front of you and use that as the focal point for your knowledge that you have that ability to learn. Mm-hmm. Putting that energy of the transmission quality, which you know is in your being. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. You put that out there in front of you. Now, I'm telling you that way because I'm not particularly a devotional type. You know? Although I have great power of heart. There is that part of myself that is going to say, but why does my heart believe in that and not that? Somehow or other, for me, it's very important. I'm not particularly intellectual either, which some people just refuse to believe, but it's true. What I'm really based on is what I feel in my body and then the ability to name it. I am your basic out there on the streets kind of person. If I have an experience, then it's an experience. But then what I do is I try to figure out, well, why did I have that experience and what was that? So I am telling you in the most pragmatic terms what the refuge object is. It's a no-name brand shaped like a guru box. You fill it up with all of your willingness to have an experience that transcends what you've known before. Now, if you're a devotional type, put someone up there that causes you to be devotional. Fine! But that doesn't make somebody else wrong and you right. What you're trying to evoke is that energy where you will trust yourself to open. Because you need that. As a human being, you need to open the door for what you don't know. As a human being, it's not what we know that we need help with. Is it?
is those other moments that you were talking about. And to have made a practice for just, you know, 5 minutes a day of just opening the door to something other than you usually would creates a habit that actually kicks in those other times in your life. We are so conditional. Why don't we condition ourselves in things that are useful? Exactly. Huh? Does this make sense to you?
Yes.
It's your mind.
Why do you think we're so resistant to doing what's good for us?
I don't think that there's an easy answer to that. I think that for some of us, we have a really profound masochistic pattern that things can't be easy. And I think some of us are really loyal. And I think some of us are just out and out fucking rebels. You know, not looking at anyone and pointing any fingers. I could point a few more, but you know what happens, you know the old Native American saying, if you point a finger, three more are pointing back at you.
That's good.
I should have done it that way. You know that saying, don't you? Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, if you point a right finger, three are pointing back at you. Yeah, I like that one a lot. There's so many reasons, don't you? Wouldn't you say? I mean, some of us are very twisted in our reasoning, aren't we? Often we have a loyalty to some childhood vow that we don't even really remember making. Maybe we made it before we could even verbalize very well. Maybe our parents were arguing and we felt scared and we wished we could do something for them. Mm-hmm. So we vowed this or that, or, you know, maybe we were raised in a war, or, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1001, there's so many reasons, mm-hmm. and they're so complex. You know, they're so complex that they might not even seem like reasons to anyone else. I don't think that's nearly... It's interesting, but I think it's probably better just to go to, okay, but what am I going to do now? Because, like, from my point of view, being someone who believes that they have had real proof in their life about rebirth linking karma and many lives running, you know, in this life, it's like, which lifetime, which mother, which father, you know. Yeah. Now I'm going to go to therapy for which lifetime. The last five parent sets have been really good, but the one before, yes. And I think, you know, you... I don't think so. That's the way I want to go. Is that a successful refusal to answer your question?
No, it's complex, as you said.
How are we doing? Oh, 10 minutes left. You've been remarkably forthcoming with your responses tonight. Thank you. So that's the refuge objects. You do them all the enlightened. So you do the guru, and then if you're doing it the Tibetan way, you do guru, and then you do idams, or you don't. It's up to you. You do Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, right? Buddha to the right of the guru. And Dharma behind. And Sangha to the left. And we can talk about that some other time if you want to talk about it.
Are these feelings or are these visuals?
The word is visual, but for most people, it's not going to be visual. It's going to be maybe, some people even have smells, or scent, or a memory, or a flower, or something.
So it really opens up the sense of perception.
It's really perception. It's really, and for some people, they do words. Yeah, go figure. Yeah, so some people, there's sort of a felt sense of something, but they really couldn't define it. But, you know, it's not important. It isn't important that you get a result. What's important is that you put the aspiration out. And over and over and over again in meditation, I would like to iterate that point. It is not that you're going to get a result. It's that you have the right to take the time to do this.
Yes.
That's what's important. That you take the time to habituate yourself to something for no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah. So as someone who has been practicing for many, many years, would you say 40 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you noticed for yourself a big difference in what would have happened before and how you experience meditation now in something like that? Let's say something just like, okay, I'm going to put these things in front. Like, you know, there are times in your practice where you just, like, that just floors me.
When I've been practicing for a couple of years, I was really pissed off that I had to take refuge. We used to do the Theravadin, remember? Mm-hmm. I was just really pissed off. I was like, well, why should I take refuge in the Buddha? I don't know the Buddha from the hole in the ground. Mm. So being me, I researched, well, what is the Buddha? Mm. So that's when I got my first Pali Dictionary. Because, you know, who, that old, what's his name, our beloved teacher, Ananda Bodhi, remember him, made us say, remember, ittipi so bhagava arahaṁ samma sambuddha. Like we're, you know, on the streets, 60s, you know. Hey man, far out. You know, I mean, like acid up the yin yang, and I gotta learn how to say ittipi so bha, I don't think so. Rolling Stones, yes, Polly, no. Remember? And then we had to do the whole one. Remember the long one, what we had to learn? Give me a break. So, and then we're supposed to sit there imaging that there's somebody there that we're saying that to. Well, I don't understand. So I got a Pali Dictionary.
And you're not an intellectual. So you got a what?
Pali Dictionary. No, I wasn't gonna do some intellectual idea.
No, but you're...
What am I saying?
You're taking an intellectual approach. I'm going to get and find out what this is.
I wanted to understand the words, but understanding, that's not intellectual, because understanding for me is in my body. Yeah. It would be intellectual if I didn't. I tell you, quite frankly, my brother is an intellectual. I love words that describe a feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
I can use the wrong word, and sometimes people actually understand what I'm saying because I have the feeling when I'm saying it. My brother loves big words. He phones me and uses them on me. I have friends, not my brother, but I have other friends who use very big words because they assume me to be an intellectual. Because I love words. And they use these big words. And what I do every once in a while, because what I really love about words is understanding the roots. Yeah. Because the root of a word tells you where it comes from.
Exactly.
Do you know what of comes from? It comes from the breath that moves away. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes perfect sense to me. Of. Yeah, so when I say of, I'm saying the breath that moves away. Mm-hmm. When my intellectual friends say of, it's like not really important because it doesn't have enough syllables. It shows a connection because they are building ideas. I am evoking feeling. I cannot understand. I can hear an intellectual describe something and understand it when they're talking because I can feel them. We walk out of the room, I don't know what they said. I can read an intellectual book, liking the words and putting them together,
I close the page, I can't remember a thing. I can read a description of something that I've experienced it, and repeat most of it when I close the book. Mm-hmm. You know? I can repeat poetry, but not the intellect, the feeling of it. So, I know I'm protesting way too much here, but you know, I'm very verbal, but I'm not intellectual. I'm very sensually motivated. How did we get into that?
I don't know.
Well, let's stop. So the whole thing of doing the refuge, putting those figures there in front of you and evoking them, has more to do with you working on how you actually feel. Because it has to be two things. It has to be visceral and intellectual. It has to be you clearly naming your feeling and acknowledging that you feel that way. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to make something other than you feel, it's going to fail, you're going to get into trouble.
Or be all
over the place. If you're working with honesty, with your own heart, and your own aspiration, there are some things you can depend on. We do wish we were kind. That's wonderful. We do tend to get caught up in meaning and forget the question of the meaningless. That's wonderful. We do feel like we'd have no worth if we're not doing something. That's wonderful. How to use those, that's meditation. Is that interesting to you?
Yes.
So it's not about doing the right thing or being holy. It's about being interested in whether holy exists and being honest. So I'm going to recite his poem to you, which I read to you last time I was here, because I love it so much. And it goes like this. Once a young man came to me and said, "Dear Master, I'm feeling strong and brave today. And I would like you to tell me the truth about all of my attachments." Mm-hmm. And I replied, attachments, sweetheart. Do you really want me to speak to you about all your attachments? When I can see so clearly you have built such a great brothel to house all your pleasures. You've even surrounded the whole damn place with armed guards and vicious dogs to protect your desires so you can sneak away from time to time and try to squeeze light into your parched being from a source as fruitful as a dry date pit that even a bird is wise enough to spit out. Your attachments? Let's not speak of those. The Hafiz understands the sufferings of your heart. Hafiz knows the trials and the pains that every soul on its way to annihilation in the sun must endure. So at night, in my prayers, I often stop and ask 1,000 angels to join in and applaud anything in this world that can bring your heart comfort. Is that lovely? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
oh, no.
Is there a union rep here? Oh, okay then. Union rep?
You notice this beautiful gold light in your heart. It spreads through your body. It spreads down your leg bones, up your spine bones, down your arm bones, especially through your shoulder bones, out your toes, out your hands, up your neck, out your head. It spreads out through all your pores, just fills, this gold light just goes right through. We just fill this room. The house, the neighborhood, the ground below, the sky above, the whole city of Ottawa. Anybody you want to pray for, just imagine them being washed with this gold light, especially somebody who has the bad taste to dislike you. Just imagine them just washed with this gold light. The whole province, the whole North America, the whole earth, just spreads out, this light just goes out into space, spiraling out into space. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, this is temporarily assuaged. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. So, Sadhu, thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. I didn't even get to the book.
It's true. Maybe tomorrow.
Maybe tomorrow. I need to recommend that I can't come back.